Okay, good morning, everybody. Nice to see you back here for another page of Yevamos. The weekly share from Masechet Yevamos is sponsored by David and Paula Bounzer and OMO Construction.
Okay, today we are learning Yevamos Daf Tesvav, and it's a very interesting topic we've been talking about. Just in general, we know that there are disputes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel throughout Shas, and we know that we Paskin like Beis Hillel, and the question that we're going to be discussing today, which we already began in last week's Daf, and Daf Yadalid, is the question of, okay, fine, so we Paskin like Beis Hillel, but what about the people themselves from Beis Shammai? Do they at least hold like their own Shita? Or do they also, does everybody hold like Beis Hillel? And that came up by us, because in our Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel, we had a machlokes in Yevamos about between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about a tsaras erva, whether one has an obligation of doing yibum with the co-wife of an erva. So our classic case that we've had since the beginning of the Masechta is Reuven and Shimon are brothers, and the mitzvah of yibum is that once Shimon dies, Reuven has a mitzvah to go and marry Shimon's wife. But we said, let's say Shimon's wife is an erva to Reuven. She's forbidden to Reuven for whatever reason. It's Reuven's daughter. So in that case, we said that there's no mitzvah of yibum with an erva. The next question was, what about a tsaras erva? Let's say Shimon has two wives. One of those wives is an erva. So fine, she's out of the picture because she's already forbidden to Reuven. So of course, Reuven can't do yibum with the erva. But what about the co-wife? What about the tsaras erva, the second wife? And so in our Mishnah on Daf Beis, we always assumed that there's no yibum for anyone. Just like there's no yibum for an erva, we were taught in our Mishnah on Daf Beis, there's also no yibum for a tsaras erva. And on the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel, it was revealed that this is actually a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So yes, we assumed, like the Shita of Beis Hillel, that there is no mitzvah of yibum with an erva, or even with the tsaras erva. However, Beis Shammai hold that there actually is a mitzvah and an obligation to do yibum with a tsaras erva. So that's the machlokes which got us onto this topic of Beis Shammai versus Beis Hillel, and so today we're going to dig into whether Beis Shammai asu kedivrayim or lo asu kedivrayim. Did Beis Shammai themselves at least act in accordance with their halachic opinion, or no? Did they held a certain way, but they didn't actually follow through with that in practicality? They really also followed Beis Hillel. So we're going to bring 9 different proofs today about whether to try to prove that Beis Shammai asu kedivrayim, that they actually acted in accordance with their Shita. And we're going to, and then today we're actually going to prove something, and we're going to have a conclusion to answer that question, and it's very interesting to see how we're going to literally delve through Shas and different areas of halacha, of sukkah, and maestros, and mikvaos, to try to bring different stories, to try to get to the bottom of this. Did Beis Shammai themselves at least hold of their Shita? So that's going to be the discussion for today. We're going to begin with our first proof of the day, from the bottom of Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis, the fifth to last line of Yedalad Amud Beis. The Gemara begins, Tashma, let's come bring a proof. To Amar Rab Yochanan ben Nuri, Heyach halacha zu ravachas b'Yisrael. This halacha of co-wives, of tsaras erva, which we said is a machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, as to whether you are supposed, whether you have a mitzvah to do yibum with this tsaras erva. So how is this halacha going to play out within Klal Yisrael? How is this halacha going to be manifested in practicality among Klal Yisrael? We're going to have some serious problems. Why? Because Nase kedivrei Beis Shammai havlad mamzer ledivrei Beis Hillel. Because if someone acts like Beis Shammai and goes ahead and does yibum with a tsaras erva, in the eyes of Beis Hillel, that child is a mamzer. Nasa kedivrei Beis Hillel havlad pagum ledivrei Beis Shammai. And if one acts in accordance with the shita of Beis Hillel, well, in the eyes of the other shita, in the eyes of Beis Shammai, the child of that relationship is going to be a pagum. So what's going on? What's the mamzer and the pogum that we're talking about? So we'll just go through the exercise of thinking about, if you follow like Shita's Beis Shammai, what does that look like in the eyes of Beis Hillel? And if you follow the Shita of Beis Hillel, what does that look like in the eyes of Beis Shammai? So let's pretend that you are like the Shita of Beis Shammai. So you hold that this is a case of tsaras erva. You hold there is a mitzvah to do yibum. So Reuven goes ahead and he marries his brother Shimon, just passed away. He goes and marries his brother's wife. Beis Shammai holds that's a mitzvah of yibum. But in the eyes of Beis Hillel, that's a very, very big problem. Because as we've said many times throughout this Masechta, there is generally a prohibition of marrying your brother's wife. Yes, we allow it for the mitzvah of Yibum, but if there's no mitzvah of Yibum, to marry your brother's wife is a very serious prohibition. It's punishable with kares. That's a chi of kares to go and marry your brother's wife. So if you're Beis Shama, you go and you're just doing your mitzvah of Yibum, you marry your brother's wife, but in the eyes of Beis Hillel, you just violated a chi of kares. And the halacha is that if one has a relationship which is a chi of kares, the children that come from that relationship are considered mamzerin. And the Torah says that mamzer lo yavo bekahal Hashem, that a mamzer can't be married into Klal Yisrael. Jews aren't allowed to marry mamzerim. So that's a very big problem. If you act like Beis Shammai, in the eyes of Beis Hillel, you have violated a chi of kares, and the children from that relationship are going to be mamzerim, and it's going to ruin the genealogy amongst Klal Yisrael. Let's say you're Beis Hillel. Let's say you act like Beis Hillel. You hold that there's no Yibum here. And so Shimon dies, and Shimon's wife doesn't do Yibum. Instead, she goes and marries some other guy. So what's the worst that could happen? Let's say you hold like Beis Shammai. In the eyes of Beis Shammai, what just happened? In the eyes of Beis Shammai, this woman was supposed to go ahead and do Yibum with Reuven, and she didn't, and instead, she didn't even do Chalitza to cut ties with Reuven. Instead, she just went and married some other guy. That's also a problem. Not as serious as the Chi of Kares we spoke about earlier. This would be a Chai Ve'lavin. This is a lo sase. It's a violation of a lo sase, a negative prohibition to when you have a mitzvah of Yibum to go marry one person, and instead you go and marry someone else. That's called Yevama Lashuk. That's a Chi of Lav. That's not, those children are not going to be mamzerim, though. A child is only a mamzer if it's a result of a chi of kares. But the child of a chi of chayve lavin is not going to be a mamzer, but our Gemara points out it is going to be a pogum. What's a pogum? Rashi explains pogum l'kehuna. A child from that relationship is pasul l'kehuna. They're not allowed to marry into any kohanim. Not as bad as a mamzer, but it's still a problem nonetheless. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying, what are we going to do about this halacha of tzara serva? We have a machlokes. Do you do yibum? Do you not do yibum? Well, if one follows Shitas Beis Shammai, you've just created a mamzer according to Beis Hillel. And if you follow the Shita of Beis Hillel, well, in the eyes of Beis Shammai, children from that relationship are going to be pogum. So what are we going to do? So Rav Yochanan ben Nuri suggests the following. Bo v'nisken lehen litzaros sheyehu choltzos v'lo misyavmos. I have this fantastic idea. Let's just tell everyone, don't do Yibum, just do Chalitza. So if you're Beis Shammai, you hold that really you're allowed to do Yibum over here. But you know what? For the sake of Beis Hillel, just go ahead and don't do Yibum, do Chalitza instead. And if you're the Shita of Beis Hillel, you hold that no Chalitza is necessary over here. By a Tzaras Erva, you don't even have to do Chalitza. You can go ahead and marry whoever you want. But you know what? Just to please Beis Shammai, at least go ahead and do Chalitza. And this way, everyone's going to be happy. Just do Chalitza and don't do Yibum. There are no Mamzerim, there are no Pegumim, and all of our problems are resolved. Unfortunately, lo hispiku ligmor es hadavar ad shenitrefa hasha. Unfortunately, he didn't actually get to put this into practice. The time ran out, and it ended up being not good timing to put this idea into play. But that was his idea, just do Chalitza and don't do Yibum. Even if you're Beis Hillel, and you hold that no chalitza is necessary, just do chalitza anyway to make sure that, to make everybody happy, and to make it not a problem in the eyes of Beis Shammai, and vice versa. Amar le Rosh Hashanah ben Gamliel, Rosh Hashanah ben Gamliel responded, Ma naaseh lahem litzaros harishonos, meyata. Rosh Hashanah ben Gamliel responds, and he says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, I don't like your idea, because yes, it works great for all future relationships, all future cases of Tzaras Erva, will say, don't do Yibum and do Chalitza. But what about those women from Beis Shammai? Those women from Beis Shammai who already, years ago, already did Yibum. They already went ahead, and in the eyes of Beis Hillel, they are creating Mamzerim. So according to your idea of saying that everyone should do Chalitza from here on in, you're basically solidifying that all of those who have already followed the Shita of Beis Shammai have already created Mamzerim through their relationships. And that's a terrible thing to tell people. So that's the back and forth. So now we try to bring a proof from that to the fact that Beis Shammai asu kederveyem. Iyamar Beis Shlomo asu haynu dekamar manase. If you hold that the Beis Shammai actually followed through with this practice halacha lamaisa, then I understand what Rishon Gamliel said, manase. What are we going to do? There are already women who followed Beis Shammai. And by saying that everyone should do chalitza from now on, you're basically saying that those children from those relationships are mamzerim. But Ela'iyah Amart Lo Asu, my manase. But if no one actually acted like the Shita of Beis Shammai, because we don't actually hold, Beis Shammai themselves never actually followed through with their halachic opinions, then what's manase? What's the problem that he says, manase lehem letzaros harishonos? So the Gemara responds, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, lo nitzrucha ela letzara atzma. It's not talking about the children being mamzerim for a woman who followed the shita of Beis Shammai. Rather, it's referring to the co-wife herself, as Rashi explains, those who already followed the shita of Beis Hillel. Well, what, how do you read it? Uma nase hachi kamar. This is how we're supposed to read the ma nase. Hanach tsaros de Beis Hillel. Le Beis Shammai hechi nave lehu. Those who have already followed the Shita of Beis Hillel, right? No one's followed the Shita of Beis Shammai, because Beis Shammai lo asu kidivrayim. What about those who followed the Shita of Beis Hillel? According to Beis Shammai, they should have to do chalitza. But lichlitzu, if they're going to do chalitza right now, mima si agavrayu. Right? Imagine you have someone who's been married to her husband for the past 15 years, and now we're going to go back and tell them, oh, you should just do chalitza right now, because you may remember 15 years ago, you had your husband died, there was a brother for you to do yibum with. So we hold, like Beis Hillel, you don't have to do yibum, but let's just play it safe, and let's just do chalitza now to cover our bases. If you do that, mimas yagavrayu, it's going to be repulsive to the husbands, because you're essentially telling a husband that he has been living in sin with his wife for the past 15 years. Can you imagine the shalom bias issues that can cause if you tell a couple that they've been violating Isurim for their entire marriage? So it can't be you're going to tell them to do chalitza. That was the problem of Shem Yomliel of Ma Nase. And if you'll say, okay, it'll be repulsive, it's going to cause shalom bias issues, but if that's what halacha requires, then that's what we have to do. Why don't we just say, do chalitza and ruin their marriages? No, because derachecha darchei noam v'chol nesivoseha shalom. The ways of the Torah are pleasant, and it can't be that there's going to be a halacha which requires one to completely ruin the entire marriage. It can't be the Torah would never require such a thing. The Torah's ways are always pleasant. So that's the first attempted proof that we had for today, that maybe we see from here that Beis Shammai asu kidivrayim, and we said, no, we can even understand this back and forth if we assume that Beis Shammai lo asu kidivrayim. This concept of derachecha darchei noam is a very interesting concept which comes up in different places in Shas and Rishonim and Achronim. This concept of the Torah could never tell me to do things that are unpleasant. So that come up over here by saying that one should do something that's going to ruin their marriage, that would be a terribly, terribly unpleasant thing. Torah would never require such a thing. It also came up actually in Ar Masechta, in Tosfos and Daf Beis, the very first page of Yevamos. Tosfos point out, what about the case of Achos Isha? So we have our case of Shimon has a wife, and once Shimon dies, Reuven has to do Yibam with that wife, unless it's an Erva. So let's say the Erva is Achos Isha. So Reuven is married to someone else, and Shimon dies, but Reuven can't do Yibum with Shimon's wife, because that surviving wife of Shimon is sisters with Reuven's own wife. It's Achos Isha. It's Reuven's wife's sister. So we said, then there's no mitzvah of Yibum in that case. Tosfos suggests, well, maybe we should just wait it out. Maybe in 5 years, or maybe even next year, Reuven's wife is going to pass away. She'll be Nifteres. And once Reuven's wife passes away, then Shimon's wife is totally fine for Yibum. The only reason you can't do Yibum with her is because she's Reuven's wife's sister. But once Reuven's wife is out of the picture, if she passes away, then this surviving wife of Shimon is now fine for Yibum. So should we say, let's just wait it out? Tosfos say, it can't be. You're going to tell a woman that she can't marry someone else. She has to wait as an aguna, because maybe at some point down the line, Yibum will be relevant and will come up again. It can't be. Derachecha darchei noam. The Torah's ways are pleasant, but would not require a woman to wait single and unmarried because maybe Yibum's going to come up again in the future. That's one place it comes up. It also comes up in the Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah is trying to identify the species of the lulav branch, which we already know, but the Gemara goes through different possibilities. And the Gemara suggests one possibility, which is a very thorny branch. It's spiky. So the Gemara says, maybe that's the species of the lulav. The Gemara says it can't be. Can you imagine you have to go to shul with your dalet minim and you're pricking your fingers and your thumb whenever you're trying to shake your dalet minim because the lulav is so thorny? It can't be the lulav comes from a thorny branch because derachecha darchi noam, the Torah's ways are pleasant. It would not require us to do a mitzvah where you're going to be bleeding halfway through halal. It can't be. So that's an example in the Gemara and Sukkah. There's also in the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch goes through all Taryag mitzvos, explaining the deeper details of the mitzvos, as well as the reasons, the Ta'amei HaMitzvos. And the Sefer HaChinuch, in Mitzvah Reish Tamach Gimel, talking about the mitzvah of Tumas Kohanim. We know a Kohen is not allowed to become impure. Kohanim can't become Tamei, but there's an exception. Kohanim could become Tamei. They can come in contact with a mace or be in the same room as a mace if that mace is one of their relatives. The Torah goes through the list of relatives that Kohanim can become Tamei to. The Sefer HaChinuch explains why is it that there's an exception that they can become Tamei to their relatives. Sefer HaChinuch says, Torah's ways are pleasant. The Torah is not going to require a Kohen to be uninvolved in the whole burial process and the whole process with the mace of their own relative, of their own parents. It can't be. The Torah would not require such a thing. And most recently in the Achronim, the Meshech Chachma in Parshas Noach discusses the mitzvah of Pruruvu. We know there's a mitzvah to have children. And the Gemara in Yevamos actually later on talks about how this mitzvah is only on the man and not on the women. Men are obligated to have children. Women are not obligated per se to have children. They have to be involved. They have to help the man fulfill that mitzvah. But they themselves don't actually have a mitzvah of Pruruvu. Why not? The Meshech Chachma explains perhaps the deeper reason why is because derachecha darchei noam, the process of childbirth and labor is a very painful and perhaps dangerous process. The Torah would not make a mitzvah for a woman that is going to be so painful and uncomfortable. It can't be. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. Derachecha darchei noam. So those are several places throughout Shas and the Rishonim and the Achronim where this concept comes up. It's a little hard to apply yourself. We can't just say like, it's snowing outside and like there's no way Hashem would want me to go out in the snow and get my feet wet to go to shul. We can't just apply ourselves and say, oh, the Torah's ways have to be pleasant. But when we have that in the Rishonim and Achronim and the Gemara itself, we have this klal of derachecha darchei noam, the way of the Torah is always pleasant. So that concludes our first proof of the day, which we ended up rejecting. Going on to Tashma, it's around 10 lines down from Tes Vav Amid Aleph. The Gemara says, Tashma, Dama Rabbi Tarfon, Ta'avani Matai Tavo Tsaras Habas Liyadi Ve'asa'ena. Rabbi Tarfon once said, and we know from other places in Shas, Rabbi Tarfon was from the Talmidei Beis Shammai, and he once said, Ta'avani, I desire, I can't wait, Masai Tavo Tsaras Habas Liyadi, I can't wait until my brother dies. It's a bit of a morbid thing to say. The Rishonim explained, try to understand why he's saying such a thing. I can't wait until my brother dies, and then I'm going to go and marry the Tsaras Habas. So my brother's married to my daughter, I won't do Yibum with her, but I can't wait to get to do Yibum with the Tsaras Habas, the co-wife of the Bas. Don't we see clearly he's saying he wants to follow the Shita of Beis Shammai? The Gemara says no, Ema Va'asiena. Rabbi Tarfon is saying not that I can't wait until I can marry the co-wife, he's saying I can't wait until I go and follow the Shita of Beis Hillel and marry that co-wife to someone else, following the Shita of Beis Hillel. Igmar asks, Vahata Avani Kamar. But he said, oh, I can't wait to put this halakha into practice. Doesn't it sound like he has like a chiddush he wants to put into practice, a mechudash halakha, a unique halakha which he wants to follow? But just following the Shita of Beis Hillel isn't such a unique halachic opinion. Why does he say Ta'avani, I can't wait? So Mara says, no, la fuke made Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. We sit on the top of the daf. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, even within the Shita of Beis Hillel, you don't have to do Yibum or Chalitza, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that you should do Chalitza just to play it safe. Rabbi Tarfon says, I can't wait until I follow the Shita of Beis Hillel, but not like the requirement of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. I'm not going to make them do Chalitza, and that's why he said to Avani, I can't wait to apply that Chiddush in Halakha. So that's the second proof, which we also just rejected. Moving on to the third proof of the day. Toshma, Maisa Bebito Sharaban Gamliel, the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel, Shahaisa Nesua Le'aba Achiv. So Rabbi Gamliel's daughter was married to Rabbi Gamliel's brother. To make it even more confusing, Rabbi Gamliel's brother's name was Abba. So that's just a great twist to it. It's his brother's name is Abba, but it's Abba Achiv, his brother named Abba. So Rabbi Gamliel's brother was married to his own daughter. And our classic case of Bito and Sarah Sabas. And then Umeis, then that brother passed away. Below Banim, without children. The Yibin Rabbi Gamliel es Tsarasa. Rabbi Gamliel went ahead and did Yibum with the Tsaras Habas, which is a Tsaras Erva. Don't we see that people actually follow the Shita of Beis Shammai? The Gemara says no. V'tizbra, does that even make any sense? Rabbi Gamliel mitalmide Beis Shammai hu? Is Rabbi Gamliel even from the camp of Beis Shammai? Of course not. The Rashi points out, Rabbi Gamliel was a grandson of Hillel HaZaken. He's not going to follow the Shita of Beis Shammai. He's literally a descendant of Beis Hillel. That can't possibly be. So what's your proof that, oh, we see that Beis Shammai follows their own Shita, Asu Kedivrayan? Rabbi Gamliel isn't from the camp of Beis Shammai. So it must be Ella Shiny Beetle Shrabban Gamliel to Islandess Havai. It must be Rabban Gamliel was following even, it was a case where even Beis Hillel agrees that you can do Yibam with the Tsaras Erva. Why? Because the Erva, Rabban Gamliel's daughter, who was the Erva in our case, was an Islandess, as we spoke about back on Daf Yed Beis. If the Erva is an Islandess, then Tsaras Islandess is going to be Mutter for Yibam. Whereas we explained that, perhaps it's a mekach taos, which we'll get into those details a bit more. Also, the Torah says, you're gonna go ahead, and when your brother dies, you're gonna marry his wife, when you marry that surviving wife, you're gonna have a child and perpetuate the legacy of your dead brother. But the problem is, an islandess is a woman who has not reached puberty and is not able to have children. She's not going to be able to have children, so that's not going to be the whole point of Yibam, is to go have kids and to make it that Shimon's legacy lives on. But if she can't have children, an islandess obviously is exempt from Yibam herself, and therefore also the co-wife of an islandess is going to be exempt from Yibam as well. So that's our Rabban Gamliel. That's our Rabban Gamliel was allowed to do Yibum with the Tsaras Habas, because she was, and we're going to explain the details of Islandess in a second. The Gemara says, Ha midiktani seifa acherim omrim bito shomim gamliel Islandess haisa, mechal datana kama savar lav Islandess haisa. So we just suggested, why the Rabbi Gamliel do Yibum with the Tsaras Habas? Isn't Tsaras Erva usually exempt from Yibum? So we said, Islandess is an exception. When you have an Islandess, this is really how it's going to work out. Islandess is perhaps a mekach tos. If Shimon didn't know that his wife was an islandess, she was unable to have children, maybe that marriage never even happened. If he knew, he wouldn't have married her in the first place. It's a mekach tos. He was unaware of the reality of the situation. And therefore we can say it's as if the islandess was never married to Shimon, and that's why the tsara, the koiv, is going to be mutter for Yibam. So that's what we said is the reason why the Tanakama says Rabbi Gamliel was allowed to marry the tsara islandess. The Tsaras Erva, but it can't be, the Gemara asks, because in the Seifa it says, Achirim Omrim, Bito Shomim Gamliel, Islandess Haisa. It says that there's a Shita of the Achirim. The Achirim hold the reason why he was allowed to do Yibum with the Tsaras Erva is because she was an islandess. That implies that the Tanakama has a different reason why he was allowed to do Yibam with the Tsaras Erva. Not because of islandess. Mechal the Tanakama Savar Lav islandess Haisa. Sounds like the Tanakama has a different reason. So we need to have two reasons. We have the Tanakama and the Acherim. We said the Tanakama was because, the reason why the Tanakama said he could do Yibam with the Tsaras Erva is because the Erva was an islandess. But that can't be, because the Acherim, they say that the reason why he could do Yibam was because the Erva was an islandess. It sounds like the Tanakama has a different reason. So Gemara gives three different answers. Gemara first suggests Hikirba, Vilo Hikirba, Ika Benayu. So really, perhaps everyone agrees that this case is where Rabbi Gamliel's daughter, the Erva, was an islandess, but there's still a dispute between the Tanakama and the Acherim. And that is about Hikirba versus Lo Hikirba. So as we said, everyone agrees that in the case of islandess, where Shimon had no idea that this whole time he was married to an islandess, a woman who can't have children, he didn't know the whole time, and then he dies. Had he known, he wouldn't have wanted to marry her, perhaps. It's a mekach tos. In that case, everyone says that the tsara, that Saras Erva is going to be mutter. But there's a machlokes about Hikirba. Let's say Shimon knew the whole time. He knew she was an islandess and still she married her. Is there a reason to still say that the co-wife is going to be mutter in that case? So that's a dispute, and that's the dispute between the Tanakama and the Acherim. So everyone agrees that this case is an islandess and Saras islandess, and that's why it's mutter. But according to Rabbi Gamliel, it's specifically because it was a Mekach Tov, so it was a case of Lo Hikirba. Shimon didn't know that the person that he was married to was an islandess, and the Acherim would say even if it was a case of Hikirba, it would also be allowed to marry the Tsaras islandess. That's the first answer the Gemara gives. Gemara gives a second answer. Ve'ibayis ema kanas ulevasov gireish ika benayu. So now the Gemara suggests that yes, the reason why, according to the Acherim, Yibam was allowed with the Tsaras erva, that's because it was an islandess. What's the reason the Tanakama said that you can do Yibam with the Tsaras erva in this case? Not because she was an islandess, but because it was a case of kanas ulevasov gireish. Meaning that yes, Shimon had two wives. One of them was an erva, and one was the Tsaras erva, but then Shimon, before he died, he divorced the erva. Even though there was a point when these women were both married to Shimon, but Shimon divorced the erva, and then Shimon passed away. By the time that Shimon passed away, the erva was out of the picture. And that's why Rabbi Gamliel says you're allowed to do Yibam with the Tsaras erva over here. The reason the Acherim don't use that reason, and instead they give a separate reason of islandess, that's because they hold that kind of those, if there was any moment where these two women were both married to Shimon at the same time, then Yibam is totally off the table in any circumstance. But the Tanakama says that even if they're both married at the same time, if Shimon divorces the Erva, then we're going to be allowed to do Yibam with the Tsaras Erva. So that's the second answer. The Gemara gives a third answer. Iba yisema yesh tnai bebiya ika benayu. Maybe is a different reason why the Tanakama holds you can do Yibam with the Tsaras Erva in this case, and that's because Yesh Tnai Bebiya. Rashi explains, imagine a guy who goes and he gets married to a woman, and he consummates the marriage with Bia, but he makes it on condition that she doesn't have any Nedarim or any Mumin. I'm only going to marry her on condition that she has no previous vows from beforehand, and that she doesn't have any blemishes, something that would, I guess, that would be a deal breaker. So then he goes and he has Bia with this woman, and then we find out that actually she did have Nedarim, or she did have Mumin, she had previous oaths, and she had blemishes. So what do we say? Do we say that that means that this marriage never happened? So it's a machlokes, as Rashi points out, the point of dispute. On the one hand, you can say, well, he married her on condition of the fact that she didn't have any previous vows, but she did, so the marriage is out of the picture, and they're not married. But the Acherim are the other Shita, and they say no, based on the klal of Ein Adam Ose Be'ilaso Be'ilaznus. Yes, technically you're right, he had a condition, and that condition did not follow through, so maybe it should not be a good marriage. But you know what that means? If this wasn't a good marriage, then that means that this guy was just sleeping around with a random woman he wasn't even marrying. He doesn't want that previous bia to be considered bias nus, that he was just sleeping with some random woman that he wasn't marrying. He'd rather say, you know what, she has some previous oaths, she has some blemishes, but I don't care, I'm going to stay married to her anyway. So that case of Yesh Tanai Bebiya, that was the situation between Shimon and the Erva. Shimon had married the Erva, but he had a certain Tanai, which a certain condition, which was not actually true in the end. So Rabbi Gamliel, the Tanakama says, Rabbi Gamliel was allowed to do Yibam with the Tsaras Erva. Why? Because he holds Yesh Tanai Bebiya. That marriage, which was had a certain condition which was not met, that marriage is not a real marriage. It's as if the Erva was never married to Shimon, and that's why Tsaras Erva was mutter. The Acherim say, no, that's actually not true. Even if the condition was not met, still it's a good marriage, and therefore the Erva was married to Shimon, and therefore Tsaras Erva would still be Usir. But the Seifa, the reason why they say that you were allowed to do Yibam, that was because of islandess. So we have three different explanations, but in the end of the day, we have rejected this proof. We thought we had a proof to say that we see Rabbi Gamliel follow the Shita of Beis Shammai, and we said, no, we can give several different reasons to explain why Rabbi Gamliel went and married, did Yibam with the Tsaras Erva, even though Beis Shammai lo asu kidivrei. That was the third proof of the day. Now moving on to proof number four. The Gemara says, Masiv Rab Misharshia. Around halfway into Daf Tezvav Med Aleph. Masav Rav Misharshia, Maisav Rabbi Akiva, Shelikate Esrog Be'echad Bishvat, Rabbi Gamliel went and he was plucking an esrog. He plucked an esrog, and it was the first. It was Rosh Chodesh Vat. The Nohag Bo Beis Isurin. He took off two maestros. Echad Kedivrei Beis Shammai. The Echad Kedivrei Beis Hillel. So what's going on over here? So the general practice is if you pluck a fruit off of a tree, there are several things you got to do before you go and eat that fruit. You have to take off truma, a certain amount, and give that to a kohen. You have to take off maaser rishon. You take off a tenth after that and hand that over to a levi. You also take off one more maaser. What is it? Depends on what year of the Shemitah cycle you're in. There are 7 years for the Shemitah cycle. In year 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, that's going to be Maaser Sheni. In years 3 and 6, you take off Maaser Ani. What's the difference? Maaser Sheni, you take off a Maaser, you take off a tenth from the produce, and you bring that to Yerushalayim, and you yourself, the Yisrael, go and eat that in Yerushalayim. Maaser Ani is you take off a tenth and you don't eat it yourself in Yerushalayim. Instead, you go and give it to an Ani, you give it to a poor person. So that depends on what year it is. If it's year 1, 2, 4, and 5, you take off Maaser Rishon. If it's year 3 or 6, you take off Maaser Ani. How do we know what year of the Shemitah cycle we're in? What's the cutoff, right? So usually, to know what year it is, we go by Rosh Chodesh, by Rosh Hashanah. By Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, to know what year it is. We're going to have Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Hashanah. That's going to begin 5781. What about for Shemitah cycles? How do I know what's the cutoff for the year of the Shemitah? So that's a machlokas in the Mishnayos and Rosh Hashanah between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. What's the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos? Right? We know Tu Bishvat is a Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. That's the Shita of Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel hold that it goes by the 15th of Shvat, but Beis Shammai hold that it goes by Aleph Shvat. Rosh Chodesh Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. And what does that mean? So that means that if we're in year 2 of the Shemitah cycle, and then Rosh Chodesh Shvat hits, according to Beis Shammai, that begins year 3 of the Shemitah cycle. And if you're Beis Hillel, Rosh Chodesh Shvat isn't the cutoff, but the 15th of Shvat, that's going to be when you begin year 3 of the Shemitah cycle. And that's very important. Because if it's currently year 2 and it's about to become year 3, so we have to know what year it is. If it's year 2 of the Shemitah cycle, then you have to take off Maaser Sheni. And if it's year 3, you have to take off Maaser Ani. So what are we going to do? So it depends on which year it's in. But the problem is that Rabbi Akiva plucked an esrog on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. That's Sabek Tal Machlokas. According to Beis Shammai, that begins year 3. And so now you should have to take off Maaser Ani. According to Beis Hillel, no. The cutoff is not Rosh Chodesh Shvat, the cutoff is Tu B'Shvat. 15th of Shvat is when it becomes the year 3, but it's currently year 2. That's going to be Maaser Sheni. According to Beis Hillel, it's Maaser Ani. According to Beis Shammai, it's Maaser Sheni. What are you supposed to do? Rabbi Akiva said, I'm going to play it safe. I'll take off two Maaseros, take off one to give as Maaser Sheni in case Beis Hillel's right. I'll give one as Maaser Ani in case Beis Shammai is right. So Smara says, Shma Mina Asu. We see that Beis Shammai followed their Shita. Because why else are Rabbi Akiva trying to play it safe for the Shita of Beis Shammai if Beis Shammai themselves don't even act practically like their own Shita? It must be that Beis Shammai themselves do, and that's why Rabbi Akiva, when he had this quandary of Beis Shammai versus Beis Hillel, he played it safe to follow all Shitas. Isn't that a proof of Asu Kedivrayam? The Gemara says no. Rabbi Akiva gamre estapikle velo yada I Beis Hillel be'echad b'shvat amur o b'tu b'shvat amur. It wasn't that he wasn't sure he wanted to follow Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. No, he's a Beis Hillel Jew. He wants to follow the halacha just according to Beis Hillel, but he forgot, he wasn't sure what was the shita of Beis Hillel. Did Beis Hillel hold Rosh Chodesh Shvat? Did Beis Hillel hold Tu B'shvat? And therefore he was misupak within the shita of Beis Hillel. Do I take off Maaser Sheni or do I take off Maaser Ani? And that's why he went ahead and did both. Not in deference to Beis Shammai, definitely not Beis Shammai lo asu kedivrayim, but in deference to the Shita of Beis Hillel, which he was just unsure. He wanted to cover all of his bases within the Shita of Beis Hillel. The Gemara now goes on to the next proof of the day. The Gemara says, Masiv Mar Zutra, Maise V'yolda Kalaso Shel Shammai Hazakein. There was a story which happened with Shammai Hazakein's daughter-in-law. Upiche says hama aziva v'sikech al gabe mita b'shvil katan. She had just had a baby. She had just had a child. And what did he do? So she was sitting indoors. He went and he made a hole in the roof. He removed the plaster from the ceiling and he covered it with schach because he wanted them to be sitting in a sukkah. So what's going on? There's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about a katan that's sarich le'imo. Children that are really, really young and they still need their mother for everything. So there's a machlokes. Beis Hillel say they have no obligation for the mitzvah of sukkah. No mitzvah of sukkah for such a child. Let's say under the age of five, let's say. If they're under the age of five and they're clinging to their mother, then they're not obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah according to Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai say no, that katan is obligated in that katan is going to be obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. So what did Shammai do? Shammai said, we're sitting here at Sukkis. My daughter-in-law just had a baby, a newborn baby, and she's sitting with the newborn baby in the house. In the house? Well, I'm Beis Shammai. I'm Shammai Hazaken. I hold that they have to be in the sukkah. So he went ahead and made a hole in the roof to put schach on top so that now they were essentially sitting in a sukkah. So Shma Mina Asu. So we see that Shammai actually followed his own shita. The Gemara says no. Hasam haroe omer laafushe avir ka'avid. We spoke about the concept of losis godudu. Losis godudu is that it's improper for various factions within Klal Yisrael to be acting with different halachic practices. As Rashi explained, it looks like Beis Toros. It looks like there are two different Torahs. You have some people following this halacha, some people following that halacha. That's the problem of losis godudu. And the Gemara suggested that what's the reason why Beis Shammai won't follow their own opinion? If you say lo asu kedivrayam, what's the reason they don't follow their own opinion? That's because of losis godudu. It's going to look really bad. People are going to see people following Beis Hillel, and I'll see other people following the shita of Beis Shammai. That's going to look really bad. It's going to look like Beis Toros. And that's why Beis Shammai lo asu kedivrayam. But over here, they can follow their own shita, and they're not going to have any problems. Why? Because yes, he's really going and he's making it into a sukkah, but to an outsider, it doesn't look like he's following the shita of Beis Shammai. It looks like he's just going to try to get some more air. It's like someone opening up the sunroof to get some more air into the room. So it doesn't look like he's following the shita of Beis Shammai. If it doesn't look like they're following their own shita, then they are allowed to follow their own shita. So our question is, asu kedivrayam, do they follow their own shita? And this is not a proof, because everyone agrees you can follow your shita if it doesn't look like you're making a halachic standing about something. And so that's why, since to an outsider, haroe omer, an outsider will say, la'afushe avir ka'avid, he's not doing the shita of Shammai, he's just opening the roof in order to let more air in, then that's going to be a reason to say that they're allowed to follow their shita, but it's possible that really lo asu kedivrayam, in other contexts, they did not follow, Beis Shammai did not follow their own shita. Marina moves on to the next proof for the day. Masiv Mar Zutra. Maisa Beshukas Yehu. Shehaisa Birushalayim. Vahaisa Nikuva Lemikva. So there was this rock, which they called Shukas Yehu. It was it was a rock which they had dug a hole in it so that they can make it into a mikvah. They can use this mikvah, so if someone becomes tameh, or a utensil becomes tameh, they dip it into this mikvah, and that's going to become tahor. And it says, V'chol tairos shahayu b'yushalayim na'asin al-gabah. And they relied on that shukas yehu, that mikvah, in order to make things tahor, and to maintain their tahor status. Rashi explains, what was this Shukas Yehu? So it's important to realize, this Shukas Yehu did not really have all the requirements of a mikvah. To be a mikvah, it's required to have 40 sa'a of rainwater. That's a lot of rainwater you have to have all in one location. But the Shukas Yehu itself had less than 40 sa'a. It only had 30 sa'a of rainwater. That, on its own, should not be a kosher mikvah. So what do you do if you have a body of water which does not have enough rainwater, it has less than 40 sa'a? How do you make that into a kosher mikvah? So one possible way is if it happens to be next to a kosher mikvah, if it's next to a body of water that has 40 sa'a, all you have to do is combine the two bodies of water, and that's a way of making our mikvah, which has less than 40 sa'a. If we connect it to a neighboring mikvah, which has 40 sa'a, then magically our mikvah itself, it has less than 40 sa'a, but it's going to be a kosher mikvah. So how do you combine two mikvahs? So the standard way, we're going to see in a few lines, the standard way is to just make a hole in the partition. There's a partition between these two bodies of water. You have a wall between two mikvahs. All you have to do is make a hole between those two mikvahs, and that's going to combine them. We're going to say what the measurements of that hole has to be, but that should be enough to combine, to connect the two mikvos, and to make that shukas yehu. Yes, it has less than 30 sah, but if we connect it to that neighboring mikvah, it can itself become a kosher mikvah. That's according to Beis Hillel. But according to Beis Shammai, that's not enough. You can't just make a hole in that partition and that's going to combine the mikvos. No, you have to break down majority of that partition, and only then is it going to be a proper connection, a proper fusion between these two bodies of water. And that's the only way to make this shukas yehu, which has less than 30 sah, that's the only way to make it into a kosher mikvah, by combining it to the neighboring mikvah, by knocking down majority of the partition. So the Gemara says, so what happened? V'shalchu Beis Shammai v'hirchivuha. Beis Shammai went, and they wanted to make this mikvah kosher according to their own shita. So yes, there was a hole connecting the two mikvahs, but Beis Shammai is more machmir. They hold that you have to even knock down the partition even more in order to connect those two mikvahs, and that's what they did. Hirchivua, they went and made a wider separation in the partition. They made a wider break in the partition to follow their own shita. Because their opinion is that you have to break down majority of the partition in order to connect the two mikvos. Vitnan, and it says in the Mishnah, what do Beis Hillel hold about this matter? This is which we actually quoted in Chagiga. On Daf Chaf Medez and Chaf Aleph, we quoted this Mishnah of Erob Mikvos, Kishpoferes Hanod, Beovia Uvechalala. What is the necessary measurement? Beis Hillel say, you don't need to knock down the whole partition or majority of the partition. All you need to do is make a hole in the wall. How big of a hole? So it explains, to combine the mikvahs, you need a hole that's kishet boferes hanod. It's like a hollowed out reed, be'ovya u'bechalala, the measurement of the hollowness of the reed as well as the thickness of the reed itself. What is that in practical terms? Kishtei etzba'os chozros l'mikoman. You have to be able to stick two fingers in that hole and move those fingers around in a circular motion. That's the hole that you need in order to combine the two mikvahs. That's Beis Hillel. But Shmamina Asu, we see that Beis Shammai, by knocking down the partition even further, they were going to follow their own shita. They're trying to cover all bases, and they even acted in accordance with their own shita. Don't we see that Beis Shammai Asu Kidivrayem? The Gemara says no. Hasam Haroe Omer Laafushe Maya Hudika Avid. Again, to an outsider, it won't be perceived as if Beis Shammai was following their own shita. Because yes, they see that Beis Shammai is going and knocking down the partition between the two mikvos, but it's not necessarily because they're trying to make the halacha follow their opinion by mikvos. Maybe they just wanted more water to flow through. It doesn't look like Shtei Toros. That's not going to be a violation of Losis Godudu. And so that concludes, that was the seventh, I believe, the sixth proof for today of Beis Shammai Asu Kedivrayem, which we ultimately ended up rejecting, and saying it was inconclusive. So it's interesting to note, just as we've been explaining the past two proofs that we just brought, we assume that the reason why Beis Shammai would not follow their shita is because of losis godudu, that it looks inappropriate if you have some people following one halacha and others following another halacha. But in reality, if you look back on the Gemara and Daf Yedalid, we gave two different reasons why Beis Shammai perhaps lo asu kedivrayem. We didn't say anything about losis godudu per se. Well, in addition to losis godudu, we also mentioned two additional ideas of perhaps there was a bas kol which came out and a heavenly voice said we don't follow the shita of Beis Shammai. Additionally, perhaps even before the bas kol, since Beis Hillel is the majority, perhaps that's the reason why lo asu kedivrayem. And so essentially now the Gemara is explicitly mentioning that there is a third reason. The Rashba says that really we need, for one way or another, we need all three of these reasons to explain why perhaps Beis Shammai lo asu kedivrayem, if you assume that they did not follow their own shita. So it could be for any of these three reasons. Maybe because there was a bas kol which said not to follow their shita. Maybe because before the bas kol, but Beis Hillel was the majority. Maybe, as we're saying right now, that because it's a problem, it's a violation of losis godudu. So now moving on to the seventh proof of today, which we're now going to try again to prove that Beis Shammai asu kedivrayem. The Gemara says, Tashma. The Amar of Elazar Bat Sadok, Kishahayisi Lomeir Torah Eitler Yochanan Hachorni. When I, Rav Elazar Bat Sadok, was learning next to Rav Yochanan Hachorni, Ra'isi Shahaya Ochel Pascha Reva Bemelach Bishnei Bitzores. I saw it was a season of drought, and he was eating dry bread and salt. That's all he was eating. So Basi the Hodati is Abba. I went and told my father, Elazar Bar Tzadok says. I said, look, Rav Yochanan Achurni is eating bread and salt. Amar li, my father told me, Holech lo zesim. Bring him some olives to eat. Maybe he has needs maybe he can use a more variety in his diet. Let's bring him some olives to eat. The holachti lo, and I brought him the olives, and ra osan shehein lachin. He saw that the olives were moist, and amarli ein ani ochel zesim. He said, I don't like olives. I'm not an olive guy. So is that really what was going on over here? He just didn't like olives. So the real reason why he said he doesn't want to eat the olives is because they were moist. And if they are wet, there is a problem of perhaps them having been mekabel tuma. There's a concept of machshirin. There's a mishnayos of Maseches Machshirin, which discuss what is necessary for something, for a food, to become susceptible to tuma. Right? If I have an apple, and someone was in contact with a mate, so this guy is tame, and he touches my apple, is my apple impure? The answer is no. Because first, that apple has to have been hit with one of seven liquids. Once it gets wettened by one of these seven liquids, the acronym of which is Yad Shacha Dam, there's a few examples are Yayin, Dvash, and Shemen, so wine, and oil, and honey. If any of those hit this apple first, then that's kind of primed it, and now it's susceptible to Tumah, and then if later on some guy comes who's impure and he touches my apple, then my apple can become Tameh. It first has to have been hit with one of those seven liquids, which for example includes oil. But the caveat to that is that only is true if I was happy with the fact that my apple got wet. Right? If my apple got doused in oil, so maybe I don't want an oily apple. And if that's the case, the Gemara in Bava Metzia darshins from the pasuk of Chi Yutan, that it has to be that apple became wet from one of the seven liquids. For example, oil hit my apple, but it has to be that I was happy with the fact that it was nichale, that either I wanted it to happen, or after the fact I said, okay, that's fantastic, I wanted to have oil on my apple. Only if I was happy with the fact that one of these seven liquids hit my food, then my food has been primed, it's now susceptible to tumah, it's hochshar lekabel tumah, and now if someone comes and touches it, if some tame person touches my apple, then my apple is going to be tame. So what happened over here? Rabbi Yochanan Achorni is brought a bucket of olives. And those olives are wet. And so in his head, he thinks, well, if these olives are wet, they have the possibility of having become tumah. They're susceptible to tumah. These olives may be tame. I don't want to eat food that's tame. And so just to be polite, he said, I'm not an olive guy. I don't like olives. But he was really concerned, perhaps, for tumah. So Gemara continues, Amar the Hodati is Abba. So I went and I told my father, I tried to offer him the olives, and he said no, he didn't want any olives. So the father understood that the reason why he said no was because he was concerned that these olives were Hochshar Lekabel Tumah, and maybe they became Tameh. So Amar li, Lech ve'emor lo, go back and tell him that these olives have no problem of Tumah. Why? Because Chavis Nikuva Haisa, Elosh Estamuha Shimarim. So as we said, yes, if this olive becomes wet, it's susceptible to tumah, but that's only if I wanted the olives to become wet. But what happened? So I knew that these olives exude some form of moisture, which I was concerned about. Maybe that's going to make them tumah if the olives get into contact with their own moisture. So what did I do? I went and punctured a hole in the bottom of the bucket to let that moisture out so that the olives would remain dry and not become wet. So essentially, he's showing he doesn't want the olives to become wet. And as we said, if you don't want that to happen, that's not going to make them tameh. And so the reason why they actually are wet is because stamua shemarim. There was sediment that actually went out and sealed up that hole that I had made, and that's why they got wet. But I didn't want that to happen. Clearly, I didn't want it to happen. I made a hole in the bottom. So don't be worried about hochshar lekabel tumah, that these olives are susceptible to tumah, and maybe they're tameh, because yes, they got wet with the moisture from the olives, but I didn't want that to happen, and therefore it's not hochshar lekabel tumah. Vitnan, that's the story. So it's nan, and it said in the Mishnayos, Chavis shal zesim migul galim, if you have olives which are tightly packed, beis shamai omrim ein tzricha lenakev, u beis hillel omrim tzricha lenakev. Beis shamai hold, you don't even have to make a hole in the bucket. Why? Because this moisture from the olives isn't one of the seven liquids. It can't just be any liquid that hits these olives and makes them susceptible to the tumah. It has to be one of the yad shachadam, one of the seven specific liquids. And yes, I know what you're thinking. Shemen, oil, olive oil is one of those liquids. But Bishamai holds that this moisture from the olives is not considered oil. It's considered meperos. It's like fruit juice. And that's not going to make the olives susceptible to tumah. That's why Bishamai hold, you don't even need to make a hole in the bucket. Bishamai say, no, you do have to. This moisture is like oil. It can make the olives tameh, or hochshel akabel tumah. Therefore, you should make a hole so that the moisture goes out, and there was and it won't get wet. But modim she'im nikvas v'stam muashim arim shehi te'ora. But everyone agrees, if you made a hole and that hole got clogged up by sediment, then even if it got wet, it's not going to be susceptible to tumah. As we said, it's only susceptible to tumah if it got wet and you were happy about that. But here, clearly, you weren't happy because you meant and made a hole for a reason. And it concludes the af al pisha talmid shamai haya kol maiso loasa ella kedivre beis hillel. Even though the guy who was right, the one who was bringing the olives, he made a hole in his bucket. Why did he make a hole in his bucket? Even though he's the shita of beis shamai, still he went out of his way to disfollow the shita of beis hillel. He was a shamai Jew. He holds you don't need to make a hole in the bucket, but he did just to go ahead and follow the shita of beis hillel, just to be nice to follow the shita of beis hillel. Iamar pesh lama asu hainerivuse. So now we're going to bring our proof. If you hold that in general, beis shamai follow their own shita, then I understand what was unique over here. I understand usually beis shamai are comfortable following their own halakhic opinions. And here someone from Shammai went and acted in accordance with beis hillel. Wow, what a nice guy. What a nice thing to do. You don't need to do that because asu kidireya and beis shamai follow their halakhic opinions. But this guy was a unique situation who actually followed the shita of beis hillel. But ela iyamart lo asu mairi buse. If beis shamai never follow their own opinion and they always follow beis hillel, so what do you have to say? Wow, what a guy. This guy was from Shammai and he followed beis hillel. Of course, all of Beis Shammai follows Beis Hillel by everything. So it must be that in general, Beis Shammai is comfortable following their own Shita, but over here they did not because of a unique situation. But this is actually a concluded proof of where we see that Beis Shammai asu kidivrayim. And so that's going to be our first. We started off with many different proofs, but those were all rejected. This is our first proof, which we actually stick with, that Beis Shammai asu kidivrayim. We bring another one. We already have a proof, which we have concluded, but we're going to bring more because why not? Amara says, Toshma, Shalu es Rabbi Yoshua, they asked Rabbi Yoshua, Tsaras Habas Mahu, what's the halacha for the Tsaras Habas, the Tsaras Erva? As we've been speaking about, Beis Shammai hold that you do Yibam, Beis Hillel hold you don't do Yibam. They asked Rabbi Yeshua, what do you think? Amar Lahem, Machlokes, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, the halacha, he said it's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, as we know. The halacha kedivrei mi, they pushed him further, but who do we follow the halacha? He said, Amar lahem, mipnei ma'atem machnisim roshi bein shnei harim gedolim. Why are you making me stick my head between two mountains of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Bein shnei machlokos gedolos, bein Beis Shammai o bein Beis Hillel. Where do I belong in this machlokes? Misyare ani, shema yarotu gilgalti. I'm afraid my skull's gonna get crushed, right? Following the metaphor. I'm sticking my head where I shouldn't, and my head's gonna get crushed. And Rashi explains, what's the concern that he has? He's concerned that he wants to follow, he wants to say the halacha is like Beis Hillel. But if he says that the halacha is really like Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai is going to be sitting there and they're going to be saying, well, if the halacha is like Beis Hillel, then you're making our children who follow the shita of Beis Shammai into mamzerim. As we spoke about earlier, if you're a Beis Shammai Jew, and you follow the shita of Beis Shammai in practice, in the eyes of Beis Hillel, that was a chi of kares, and those children are going to be mamzerim. So that's why he was afraid to say anything, because by standing strong like the shita of Beis Hillel, he's basically saying that Beis Shammai's children are mamzerim. So he says, I'm not going to tell you what the halacha is about Tsaras Habas, aval ani meyed lachem al shtei mishpachos gedolos. I'll tell you something that I saw, I'll testify about two families, two very great families, shehayu b'Yerushalayim, mishpachas beis tzivuim miben achmai, that was one family, u'mishpachas beis kupai miben mekoshesh, that's a second family, shehem b'nei tsaros, they were the children of tsaros, of co-wives, who followed the shita of Beis Hillel. They didn't do yibum, and instead they went and married some other guy, and they had children, u'mehem kohanim gedolim, and they went and they were Kohanim Gedolim, and they actually were involved in the Avoda on the Mizbeach. Okay, we're going to get to that. Back to that on the bottom of the Amud. So the Gemara says, our proof, Yamar Beishlama Asu, Hainu Dekam, Mar Misyare Ani. If you say Beishlama acts like their Shita, I understand why Rabbi Yehoshua was afraid to pass in like Beis Hillel, because then you're making the children who follow the Shita's Beis Shammai, the children of that relationship, are going to be Mamzerim. Ela Yamar Lo Asu, Amayka Amar Misyare Ani. If Beishlama didn't actually follow their Shita in practice, then why is he afraid to pass in against Beis Shammai? He's not creating any Mamzerim. So that's our proof that Beis Shammai acted like their own Shita from this story with Rabbi Yehoshua. The Gemara rejects, V'nehi, is that really a good proof? V'nehi nami ta'asu, even if Beis Shammai acted like their Shita and did Yibam with the Tzaras Erva, my Misyariani, why was he afraid? You said that he's afraid because he's going to make that was a chi of kares, and that's going to, and the children from that relationship are going to be mamzerim. But ha'amar of Yeshua ain mamzer ella mechayvim bisos beistin. Of Yeshua holds that the children that are the result of a relationship which was a chi of kares, those kids are not mamzerim. Only a chi of kares is not punished by beistin; that's punished from Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Of Yeshua holds that the children from a chi of kares relationship are not mamzerim. Only the children from a relationship which is punishable with misa from beistin. Only those kids are going to be mamzerim. But in our case of a chi of kares, they're not mamzerim. So what is he afraid of? The Gemara answers, Nehi nami de mamzer lo have, but pagum mia have. So yes, they're not going to be mamzerim, but they are going to be pegumim. As we said, they're pagum, that they're going to be pasul to kahuna. So Beis Shammai followed like their shita. Rabbi Yehoshua is afraid to paskin against Beis Shammai. Why? Not because those kids become mamzerim, but because those kids are going to be pegumim, they're going to be pasul, invalidated, and not allowed to marry kohanim in the future. How do we know? We know from the learning of Kal v'Chomer, from an almana, a widow who marries a kohen gadol. Ma almana she'eni sura noeg b'chol bina. B'kol bina pagum. There's a prohibition for a kohen gadol to marry a widow. Right, we know a Kohen, any Kohen, a Kohen Hedjot, can't marry a divorcee, a Grusha, and a Kohen Gadol can't marry an Almana, a widow either. So this situation of Almana, the Kohen Gadol, let's say an Almana, a widow, goes and marries a Kohen Gadol, what's the status of their children? The halacha is that those children are going to be Chalalim, they are going to be Pagum, essentially. They are not Kohanim, they lose their Kahuna status and are not allowed to marry Kohanim in the future either. So if my almana, just like an almana who married a kohen gadol, she'eni sura noeg bakol, that's an iser that only is relevant to very few people, not even al kohanim, just kohanim gedolim. And from that relationship, the kids are pagum, they're pasul to kahuna, bina pagum. So zu, our case of tzaras erva, she'isura shava bakol, our case, which is not just kohanim gedolim, it's by all Yisraelim. So of course, the kids from that relationship should be pigumim. Okay, so we have concluded our proof that Beis Shammai does follow their Shita, and that's why Rabbi Yehoshua was afraid to paskin against them. The Gemara asks a separate question. Kabau minei tzaros v'kapashit lei b'nei tzaros. Let's think back to this story. They asked Rabbi Yehoshua, what's the halacha about co-wives? Can you do Yibam or can you not do Yibam? And he didn't answer that question. Instead, he just told them that, oh, by the way, if someone actually followed Beis Hillel and didn't do Yibam, what's the status of those kids? Oh, those kids are going to be totally kosher and can go do the avoda. No one asked you about the kids. They asked you about the tzaros themselves. Can they themselves do Yibam or not? They didn't ask what's the status of the kids after the fact. The Gemara says no. Tarti kaboy mine. Really, they asked him two questions. Tzaros mai. Can you do a Yibam with the tzaros erva, the koif of an erva? And secondly, im tim salomar tzaros ke beis hillel. If you hold that the koif of an erva, you do not do Yibam like beis hillel, and she can go and marry someone else, but B'nei tzaros de Beis Hillel le Beis Shammai mahu. As we said, in the eyes of Beis Shammai, what? How do we view the children of such a relationship? L'mai nafkamina, who cares? Why are you asking what Beis Shammai thinks? If we hold like Beis Hillel and we paskin like Beis Hillel, who cares what Shammai is thinking in the back of their heads? L'mifshad v'lad machzir grushaso le Beis Hillel. Because this is going to help us understand the case of Machzir Grushaso and their children. Right? As we said, if you act like Beis Hillel, and you don't do Yibam, and you marry some other woman instead, that's a chi of lav. In the eyes of Beis Shammai, you violated a chi of lav, a los haaseh in the Torah. And by knowing what the status of this relationship of Chai V'Lavin, that's going to let us know what the status is from other examples of Chai V'Lavin. For example, of Vlad Matzir Gushaso. We spoke about Matzir Gushaso several times already back on Yud Beis as well, about what's the case. One is not allowed to remarry a woman that they divorced if she went and married someone else in the interim. So you're married to a woman, you get divorced, she marries someone else, and then she divorces that guy and she's back on the market. There is a prohibition for you to remarry that woman. So that's Machzir Gushaso. If you did, you violated a lo saseh. So that's also an example of Chai V'Lavin. So what's the status of those children? So by telling us what Beis Shammai think of this case of Tzeres Erva, in the eyes of Beis Shammai, if you follow Beis Hillel, what's the status of the child of that Chai V'Lavin? We'll know what the status is also of other cases of Chai V'Lavin. And if they have children, for example, a Machzir Gushaso. And we explain what's the suffix. Mi kamrin on kal v'chomer. Do we say the kal v'chomer as we said a second ago? Umal manal l'kohen gadol she'eni suresh avibakol bina pagum. If an almanat kohen gadol, a widow who marries a kohen gadol, their children are going to be a chalal, they're pasul to kahuna, and she herself also happens to be pasul to kahuna, but maybe we should say kal v'chomer. If by this iser of almanat l'kohen gadol, which is very unique, it's very specific, it only applies to kohanim gedolim, and still the result of that case is that the children are going to be pagum. So perhaps also, perhaps by our case as well of Machzir Gushaso and the Tzeres Erva, maybe also the child, which is a child of Chai V'Lavin, maybe that child should be considered Pagum and Pasul to Kahuna. That's one side of the question. Alternatively, O Dilma Ika L'Mifrach, one could ask on that Kal V'Chomer, Male Almana Shehi Atzma Mischaleles. Maybe that case is different, because in that case, she herself also is going to be Pasul to Kahuna. So maybe Dafka, specifically in the case of a widow who marries a Kohen Gadol, in that case, the kids are Pasul to Kahuna, because she herself, the woman who was involved in the violation, is also Pasul to Kahuna. She can't marry Kohanim in the future either. But by our case of Tzeres Erva, where you do Yibam, where you don't do Yibam and you marry someone else, or in our case of Machzir Gushaso, where you remarry a woman, she herself definitely is not going to be Pasul to Kahuna. So maybe the kids also are not going to be Pasul to Kahuna. So that's our question. So in sum, he had two questions for Yehoshua. What's the halacha? Can you do Yibam or not with a Tzeres Erva? And if you did not and you followed Beis Hillel, what is that look like in the eyes of Beis Shammai? And he concluded, he said, Amar Lahu, Tzeres I'm afraid to tell you the halacha about Beis Hillel, because I'm afraid what Beis Shammai is going to do to me. But B'nei Tzaros, I'll testify, I'll let you know that if one acted like Beis Hillel, in the eyes of Beis Shammai, there's no problem, because they went ahead and did the Avodah. Final proof today is literally a one-liner, just to complete the thought. Tashma, the ninth proof of the day, B'mer B'dosav in Hyrcanus, Hotra Tzaros Abbas La'achin. There was a case of Dosav Hyrcanus when in his days they would allow doing Yibam, with the Tzaras Habas. Shmamina, Asu, Shmamina. We conclude that people who held like Beis Shammai acted in accordance with the Shita of Beis Shammai. So what have we spoken about today? We went through 9 different proofs to try to prove that Beis Shammai actually Asu Kedivrayam. We know Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel have many different disputes throughout Shas, but do they actually hold like their own Shita? So we brought proofs from Yochanan ben Nuri. We brought a proof from Rabbi Tarfon, from Gamliel's daughter. We brought a proof from a case of the esrog that was plucked in the maestros. We talked about a proof from Sukkah, Beis Shammai making a hole in the roof. We brought a proof from Mikvaos. And we ultimately rejected all of those proofs, but then we brought a proof from the case of the olives with Machshir and the Hokshad Lekabal Tuma. And we brought this final proof from Yehoshua, who was afraid to paskin against Beis Hillel, and we conclude that Beis Shammai is afraid to paskin against Beis Shammai like Beis Hillel, because we conclude that Beis Shammai asu kedivrayim, that they actually act in accordance with their halachic opinions. Have a good day, everyone.